Please turn in your Bibles to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27, we're going to read the verses 1 and 2 and 11 to 26. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27. We're going to read the verses 1 and 2 and 11 to 26. This is God's Word. When morning came, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and laid him away and delivered him over to Pilate the governor. Now, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus said, "You have said so." But when he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you hear how many things they testify against you?" But he gave him no answer, not even to a single charge. So the governor was greatly amazed. Now, at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they then had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want to release? For you, Barabbas, or Jesus, who is called Christ?" For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, saying, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him in a dream." Now the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor again said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Let him be crucified." So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather the riot was beginning, he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves." And all the people answered, "His blood be on us and on our children." Then he released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified. Something happened this week in Scotland which for about 72 hours thrust our nation to the forefront of international politics. Such was the magnitude of this event that the US Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, made comment on it before it took place. And after it had taken place, the US President Barack Obama stated in a radio interview that he considered what had taken place in Scotland to be a mistake. At a press conference on Thursday, the 20th of August, the event that captured the world's media's attention unfolded as our Scottish Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill announced to the world his decision to release the Lockerbie bomber Abdul Basit Ali al-Magrahi. It was a lengthy statement. I listened to it. It took some 28 minutes. He very thoroughly and systematically worked through the legal reasons as to why he should exercise his responsibility as the Scottish Justice Secretary and release this man. The central tenet of his reasons was that of compassion. He said that the 57-year-old Libyan Megrahi, who had been jailed in 2001 for the terrorist attack which had claimed 270 lives in the Pan Am flight 103 over Lockerbie, was going to die of terminal prostate cancer, and therefore on compassionate grounds he would sanction his release from Greenock prison and permit him to return to see the remainder of his life out in Libya. It was a decision which many of the families, victims' families, bitterly disagreed with. Susan Cohen, whose daughter Theodora was one of the 35 students from the Syracuse University who was killed in that flight in 1988, said, "Compassion! Compassion for him!" And she went on to express her amazement at why a mass murderer of such infamy should be freed to return home rather than being treated in jail until he died. Whatever your personal view on the matter, whether you're of the view this man should have served out a sentence in prison, or whether you're of the view that the decision to release him on the basis of compassion, whatever your view of that, that's your view. The point that struck me as I watched and listened and then read about the event subsequently was this. This is not the first time in history that a convicted, notorious prisoner has been released from prison on compassionate grounds. I'm sure it has happened throughout the history of the world on many occasions. The other occasion that I want, when it took place, to draw your attention to this morning, it took place in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. The man at the centre of the furore on that occasion was the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. The heart of the issue was, should he release a notorious prisoner, or should he release an innocent man who had done nothing but good all his life? And I want, in a very simple way this morning, to look at this historic event which will overshadow on the day of judgment the events that took place in Scotland at 1:18 on Thursday afternoon by considering the three men who were involved in this event that we read about in Matthew chapter 27. And when I look at the man who made the decision, the notorious prisoner who was released on the basis of compassion, an innocent man who was delivered up to be crucified. The man who made the decision, his name was Pontius Pilate. He was, we read in Matthew chapter 27, verse 14, the governor of the region of Judea. It just says that he was the governor there, but it was the region of Judea that he was the governor over. As to his actual title, well, it varies during the period of the New Testament. When Samaria, Judea, and Idumea were first amalgamated into the Roman Judean province in AD 6, the governors held the title prefect. However, after the death of the Jewish king Herod, Agrippa, the man who was involved in this self-same incident in AD 44, the governor held the title of procurator. So if you read sometimes of prefect or procurator, it refers to this role that the Roman governor had in exercising responsibility over the people living in this region at the jurisdiction of the Caesar in Rome. The bottom line about this man in terms of responsibility was that he was responsible to Caesar for three different aspects of life within Judea. He was the defense minister, responsible for military in the region. He was the chancellor of the exchequer, who had responsibility for the collection of imperial taxes. And he was also the secretary of state for justice, as he possessed limited judicial functions. As military commander or defense secretary for the region, he would have had a small army of men stationed with him at Jerusalem. And he would have had at his call the larger legions of Roman soldiers situated in Syria. As collection of imperial taxes, he had men employed, such as men like Levi or Matthew, whom we read about in Matthew chapter 9, verse 9. And over those men would have been men like Zacchaeus, Luke chapter 19, who had responsibility for collecting those taxes off the tax collectors and then feeding them through the system to Pontius Pilate, who then would have then fed the system through to Caesar. And he had limited judicial functions. He had the power of appointment of the high priest, who presided over the Jewish ruling council, who were the day-to-day administrators of justice in the district of Judah and Jerusalem. So whilst he didn't get his hands dirty in the day-to-day legal cases, he was brought in on occasions to deal with the most serious legal matters to affect that region. Hence the reason why he is the central character, or one of the central characters, in this event. He normally resided at Caesarea, and he would have travelled through the province, especially to Jerusalem, in the course of performing his duties. The feast that we read about in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 15, is the feast of Passover. It was, you will recall, the most significant feast in the Jewish religious social calendar. And the reason for that was because it marked the occasion of the deliverance of the nation of Israel out of Egypt into their pathway on the road to the promised land. So the Passover was a very, very big event, a very significant national event in the Jewish calendar. And Pilate, as governor or prefect or procurator, whatever term you want to call, he would have been expected to be in Jerusalem at this time because of the sheer scale of the event and the significance of the event. And it's during this Passover event that this amazing thing takes place. That brings us to the second key person in the story, the notorious prisoner who was released. His name, we are told, is Barabbas, verse 16. They had seen then a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. The early Greek texts actually have him as Jesus Bar Abbas. The term Abba means father, so translating his name, it was Barabbas means son of father. It's a fairly strange name to have, son of father. This man's profession was terrorism, or he was a freedom fighter, depending on which view you took of the rights of the Roman Empire to have imperialistic rule over the land that the Jews lived in. He was a man who had engaged, participated in, orchestrated a campaign of violence against the state. Mark tells us that he had committed murder. Mark's Gospel, chapter 15, verse 16. Matthew refers to Barabbas only as a notorious prisoner. John, in John's Gospel 18, refers to him as a bandit, which is a word contemporary historians of the day said was that Jephesus used in regard to talking about revolutionaries. So here is a man who was notorious. He was not some individual who had gone out and just got caught up in a night of activity. He was known to the Roman authority. He was known to the people of Israel. He was regarded as one, Mark speaks of him, Luke speaks of him as being someone who participated and was involved in rioting. So, he is a man who had his hands well steeped in the blood of the people of Israel. Whatever the case of his crimes, the penalty under Roman law would have been crucifixion. He should have been crucified for the notorious nature of his crimes against the state. But we have at the heart of this story a custom which we're told about in verse 15 of Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27. And the custom is that at the time of the feast, it was within the power of the Roman governor to release to the crowd any prisoner whom they wanted. You can read about it in Mark's Gospel, chapter 15, verse 6, John's Gospel, chapter 18, verse 39, and Luke's Gospel, chapter 23, 17. Whether this custom had been devised by the Jews or the Romans is not clear. But the fact remains, every year at the Passover, there was clemency offered to an individual who should have been put to death. He was set free at the request of the people. On this occasion, Pilate brings two people before the crowd. Barabbas, the notorious terrorist, and Jesus, the completely innocent individual. Jesus had been brought to Pilate by the Jewish ruling council. They had arrested Jesus. Do you remember the night in which he had ate the supper and Judas Iscariot had left the room? Jesus had taken the other 11 apostles to the Mount of Olives. There he had engaged in prayer, counseling them to watch and pray, only to see them fall asleep on two occasions. He had pleaded with his father if there was some other way in which he could be saved, if his father would release him from that death. And then there was a commotion. Men arrived with clubs, soldiers. Judas Iscariot walks up to Jesus, kisses him on the cheek, the pre-arranged signal, and Jesus is taken and arrested. He had been accused and had undergone a trial by the Sanhedrin, who had brought forward false testimony against him, which collapsed in on itself. And on the basis not of any crime committed, but on the basis of blasphemy, he had been condemned by the Sanhedrin. The only problem was, as far as the Romans were considered, blasphemy was not a condemnable offense. You could not be put to death for blasphemy. And so when they brought Jesus to Pilate, The charges that they brought were not of blasphemy. They were not religious. But Luke tells us that they brought against him charges that showed that he had opposed, supposedly, Caesar. By calling himself a king, and that he had refused to pay taxes. And so, by bringing it into the realm of the politic, and bringing it into the realm of tax affairs, the Sanhedrin believed that they could interest Pilate in this case. They were determined to get Pilate to hear a case against Jesus. They were convinced that this man needed to be put to death. But they knew they couldn't bring the charge of blasphemy towards Pilate, or before Pilate, because Pilate would have laughed them out of court. He just would not have taken it seriously. And so when they come to Pilate, we read in Luke's Gospel, chapter 23, that the Sanhedrin begin to accuse him. We find this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is the Christ. Now, of course, if they had wanted to bring evidence, supposed, of that, they could have called Matthew, who was a former tax collector, and they could have said that Jesus had said that Matthew had given up his job and had followed him, or Zacchaeus was another one. Pilate sees through their politicking, and he goes straight to the issue, and Pilate says to Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" We have that in Matthew, John, Luke, and Mark. Jesus responds, "You say so." This is truly remarkable. Here is Pilate asking this carpenter from Nazareth, who has been teaching and healing people, "Is he the king of the Jews?" And the only answer that Jesus gives is, "You have said so." The chief priests continue to question Jesus, but he answers them not. And we read in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27, verse 14, that not a single charge is brought against him, and that the Roman governor, Pilate, is greatly amazed. Pilate then hands over Jesus to Herod Antipas, who is the king of the Jews in Galilee. Herod is excited to meet Jesus, meets with him, discusses with him, but ends up mocking Jesus. Doesn't speak with him, ends up mocking Jesus, and he sends him back to Pilate. Pilate has Jesus on his hands. He knows that this man is not guilty of any crime because no charge has been brought. He is concerned about what he's involved in because his wife has warned him, verse 19 of chapter 27, to have nothing to do with Jesus because he is a righteous man, saying that she has suffered much because of a dream, because of him. He has the opportunity to release Jesus under the clemency provision of the Passover feast. So he goes with Barabbas and Jesus. Does he pick the most notorious prisoner in the jail that he can in choosing Barabbas, so as to paint the greatest contrast with this innocent man, Jesus? In identifying Barabbas, is he going to someone whom he believes the Jewish people just will never release? This man has done them great harm. This man has caused great grief. This man has been the one who has orchestrated a campaign that has had blood of the innocent as well as blood of the guilty in his mind. Those who engage in terrorism are not concerned about so-called collateral damage. I once heard of a terrorist in Northern Ireland who had a public meeting in Scotland in the 70s. He was a leader of one of the movements in Northern Ireland. Speaking, when asked the question, when you set off a bomb and it kills some of your own people, does that not want to dissuade you from pursuing this course? And someone told me who was at that meeting that the man responded quite calmly, quite clearly, in this war there will be collateral damage. And if we are to win this war, we must accept that fact. And what he meant by collateral damage is the blowing up of boys and girls, men and women, who had nothing to do at all with that situation. And so here in this man, Barabbas, you'd have a man who would have had the same mindset, the same heart. I don't care about anybody else. And the people in that land would have known and identified that heart, and they would have seen the evidence of that heart, and they would have been well acquainted with that heart. And so whenever Jesus is bringing Barabbas to this, to these people, well, when Pilate is bringing Barabbas to these people, he is picking someone who he knows they were never ever going to release. Especially when he is contrasted with the godly life of Jesus Christ, who has gone about Judea healing people. There were people in Jerusalem that day whose mothers and fathers, whose brothers and sisters, whose cousins had been blind and he had healed. He knew lame men who were walking. He knew deaf people who could hear. He knew the story of those who had been raised from the grave. He knew he heard. You can speak to her. Just to be ordinary here. He knew he heard. And yet, what do we see? What do we see? He brings this man, these two men, and he presents them to them. Which of the two do you want to release? They said, Barabbas. I'm sure that he couldn't believe what he heard. So he asks a follow-up question. Then what shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ? Let him be crucified. Then Pilate asked the question, what evil has he done? Now let me quote to you two contemporary historical views of Pilate. One historian of the period says, Pilate was inflexible, he was stubborn, he was a man of cruel disposition. He executed troublemakers without a trial. He refers to Pilate's venality, his violence, his thefts, his assaults, his abusive behavior, his endless executions, and his endless savage ferocity. Josephus records an incident when Pilate spent money from the temple. He took money from the Jewish temple to build an aqueduct. The Jews protested. Pilate commanded some of his soldiers to go into the crowd, hide among the crowd, and at a given signal, Pilate's soldiers randomly attacked, beat, and killed scores of Jews to silence their petition. Pilate wasn't a pleasant individual. He's not the sort of guy you'd have had round for an evening meal and a careful chat. This guy had got to where he was because of his brutality and his ability to inflict pain on people without causing them any thought. And so when this character, Pilate, this evil, violent, inflexible, stubborn man of cruel disposition, of abusive behavior and endless unwarranted executions, when he asks them, what evil has he done? That's such a striking statement. What was it to Pilate? Do you want to kill him? Kill him! I don't care. If you want to play politics, you play your politics. I'm not really all that interested in your little games. It doesn't make any difference to me. But here is this godless, evil, violent man, and even he recognizes the wrong that is being perpetrated here. The compassion that's been shown to Barabbas, and the violence that is being shown to this man, Jesus Christ. And then he washes his hands of the whole affair. He is so struck by what is taking place that he demonstrates to them, it's your responsibility. I am innocent of this man's blood. And then do you hear what they say? Do you read it in verse 25? The people answered, his blood on us and on our children. His blood be on us and on our children. What unbelievable words. He released Barabbas, has Jesus scourged, and delivers him to be crucified. Oh, that the world would hear that message. Oh, that the world would hear the message of the innocent man to whom no charge had been brought, of whom no evil had been heard. Oh, that the world would hear the message of the death of Jesus Christ, not at the hands of Pilate, not at the hands of the Sanhedrin, not at the hands of the Jewish people, not at the hands of the Roman soldiers who crucified him. None of them had compassion. Pilate had no compassion. He could have stood his ground and said, you're wrong, this man is being released. And anybody that wants to defy me, you can die in the point of the sword. He'd done it before. The people showed no compassion. GGC didn't deserve compassion because he had done nothing wrong. You only show mercy to the wrongdoer. You only show compassion to the wrongdoer. But Jesus Christ had done no wrong in thought or word or deed. They wouldn't even recognize who he was. The Father put him to death. The chastisement of the Father was laid on him. The Father turned his face away from him. The Father took a son whom he loved, my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. They had him stand before Pilate and Herod and the Sanhedrin. And they had him throw their aspersions. And they had him place the crown of thorns on his head. They had him mocked. They allowed him to be spat upon. They allowed him to be ridiculed. And then he allowed these people to say, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. And then he allowed him to be dragged through the streets of Jerusalem. And then he allowed him to be taken and nailed to that cross. And he allowed him to be raised there and to die there. Why? That you and I might receive compassion. that you and I might receive compassion. For you see, the only court that matters is the eternal court. And when Kenny McCaskill said he has been brought to a higher court, that wasn't his exact words, or a higher judge, not meaning comment on the decision, but when he made those words, what he was recognizing is that no land or no man or no nation can make any comment on another man's life given eternity. What we should be praying for McGrathy is not his release from prison. If we have any heart for McGrathy today, we should pray for his eternal salvation. If we only desire to see that man go free, then that's the heart. As we should pray for everybody and anybody in this world that we know. For real compassion, real heart is shown when we plead with God for the salvation of the lost. For we were numbered among them. We were like them. May not have planted bombs. We may not have shot people. We may not have been the greatest terrorists in the world. But the reality is that the things that come out of our mouths and our hearts and our minds were just in the eyes of God as heinous as these crimes. Christ says, if you hate, you commit murder. If you hate, you commit murder. And many times have we looked and hated someone. And if we had the heart and we had the weaponry, we could have executed it. And there is the Father showing compassion. Compassion. And sending His Son, His only beloved, perfect Son, that He might experience that most horrific of eternal judgments, the wrath of God being lavished upon Him for those days when He was separated from the Father. And all for us. All for us. Oh, the compassion we have received. Oh, the mercy we have received. What a phenomenal blessing. And we're free to live our lives. Free to live our lives. Walking for His glory. Compassion. 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 Amen.